Prologue. Mr. Gibb, can I have your photo? The year was 1986, and as San Francisco Chronicle music journalist Joel Selvin recalled, Andy Gibb was in town for a weekend to serve as the grand marshal of a charity rally for the March of Dimes, an organization for which the singer made many charity appearances from the late 1970s through the mid-1980s. He had just walked out of an office at Kaiser Stadium, surrounded by security officers. Andy shooed them aside, spread his arms out, and smiled for the photo. The photographer quickly took the shot and then approached Andy. "Here, this is for you," he said, as he handed Andy some papers. Andy was puzzled. "What's that?" "I've just served you," the photographer replied. The photographer, H. Allen Gilstein, was not a member of the press. Gilstein was a private detective, acting, in this instance, as a process server. Andy was badly in debt, and many of his creditors had run out of patience. One of them had promised Gilstein $500, equivalent to over $1,200 in 2021, if he managed to serve Andy. Hoping to seize the opportunity, Gilstein had phoned Selvin, who suggested the ruse that the private eye utilized. When Selvin arrived at his office on the following Monday, he found a magnum of champagne and a photograph of Andy Gibb on my desk. This short but dramatic episode would have been unthinkable 5 years earlier. From 1977 to 1981, Andy Gibb, who made pop music history by reaching number one on the record charts with his first three singles, sold 20 million records. And when his popularity as a recording artist began to slip, he transitioned into television, hosting the popular syndicated musical variety series Solid Gold, and theater, landing a starring role on Broadway in Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat in the fall of 1982. But just as a winning combination of attributes, his talent, charisma, boyish good looks, and the assistance of his brothers, the Bee Gees, especially Barry, propelled Andy to sudden superstardom at the age of 19, so did a perfect storm of demons cause a downfall that was almost as spectacular as his rise to the top. Andy was insecure about his success, believing that he owed much of it to Barry. He was tormented by not being able to see his only child, a daughter born in January 1978 out of a brief teenage marriage. And in an era when cocaine use was rampant among pop and rock stars, Andy often indulged. Finally, his much-publicized romance and, in March 1982, breakup with television star Victoria Principal sent him into a downward spiral. He lost his jobs on Solid Gold and Broadway due to missing too many shows. By 1984, his career was floundering, and his addictions were damaging his health. He entered the Betty Ford Center in 1985, but he continued to struggle. In 1986, he sought treatment again, this time without the press coverage that had accompanied his first attempt at rehabilitation, at a clinic in Santa Barbara. He also joined Alcoholics Anonymous. Andy was now clean and sober and eager to rebuild his broken career, but he was so hopelessly in debt that he would have to declare bankruptcy before he could make any serious efforts to do that. In the fall of 1986, he returned to Miami Beach, which he had left for California 6 years earlier in a bid for independence from his brothers, particularly Barry, to try to get back on his feet. Shortly before he returned to the Sunshine State, Andy sat for an interview with the legendary DJ and radio host, Cousin Brucey Morrow, for the television program PM Magazine. For all the incredible highs and lows he had experienced, Andy was still only 28 years old, and he sounded hopeful about his future. "In my heart," he declared, "I really want happiness, serenity, peace of mind, and I want to keep growing, you know? Just growing. And I think more than anything else, I want to give a lot." Tragically, he wouldn't get the chance. At the beginning of 1988, Andy left Florida for England, where he settled into a cottage on his brother Robin's estate, about 60 miles outside of London, and signed a recording contract with Island Records. He seemed optimistic and excited, but by the time he turned 30 on March 5th, his insecurities were taking hold of him again, and an inflammatory heart condition that had plagued him for years began flaring up badly. His brothers, Maurice and Robin, both had frightening premonitions about him. "It was like a nightmare, except that I was awake," Robin told a reporter in 1989. "It frightened the living daylights out of me. Everything started to close in on me. I felt I would not be able to escape, like I was trapped in a box. I was claustrophobic and gasping for breath." A few days later, on March 10th, Andy was dead.